the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and Chris Prytower.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and I want to welcome you to this week's show.
And I'm Chris Prytower. This week, we pick up on our series about planning for your retirement, but with a different perspective. As we discussed in our first program on this series, we talked about how you've been led to believe that your retirement depends on you achieving a certain number. Achieve that number, and you'll be fine. In fact, anything less, and you may have a problem. But as we noted, that isn't how actual retirement works. It's not about a number. It's about you. It's about your lifestyle and making sure that you have adequate funding, which can come from things other than just a number of how big of a portfolio you have. So, Jim, let's start by refreshing our listeners with some of the key points from our first series, and then let's take it away from there.
Okay. When we began this series, we talked about thinking of your retirement in three stages or three phases. And a lot of you that are retired are going to relate to this. Phase one, they categorize as between the ages of 65 and 75. And those are what we call the go-go years. Your health is pretty good. You're flexible. You have a lot of energy. You're taking trips. You're very active physically. Then phase two is from ages 75 to 85, you begin to slow down a bit. You're still taking trips, maybe less active. And then phase three, which is 85 plus, they call the no-go years. Now, here's the thing that's critical about this. Each phase will require different amounts of funding. Let's say you might use more funds during phase one of your retirement when you're, let's say, taking a lot of trips, going places you didn't have the time to do or go when you were working, and then phase three, when medical expenses start to increase. And we also discussed three forms of risk you will have to deal with. Now, let's talk about the one that most times when you're talking to a financial advisor, they're going to talk to you about, let's say, market risk. You know, the stock market could go down, or business risk. You buy a bond and the bond defaults or it's downgraded. Those are typical risks you think about. But there's other risks that impact you as a retiree. Political risk. Now, you might think, what is political risk? How does that affect me? Think of inflation. A government enacts a program that is inflationary. Or public policy risk. And let's think of the Federal Reserve. Think about the Fed lowering interest rates to zero and keeping them there for 7 years. What did that do to your returns? It lowered them. You got nothing at the bank compared to times when you used to get high single digits. Then another one we have is behavioral risk. What about your spending? Let's say that you had a well-paid job, you were making good money, but you retire, and maybe your savings aren't as high as they should be. What happens if you want to maintain the same spending lifestyle? And then we have what we call unsystematic risk. These are the things, for example, longevity. Instead of the average lifespan, you live into your 90s and maybe end up in a retirement home or needing assisted care. Health risk. What happens? You start out retired and you're pretty healthy, and all of a sudden you get a debilitating disease. And the other ones are called shock risk. All of a sudden, let's say a divorce, or for example, your kids come back home to live with you. It's probably every parent's dream that your kids come back and live with you when you retire. So, yeah, believe me, folks, that happens. I'm sure listening, you know, you might be in that situation. But, you know, we boiled it down to three simple measures of your financial health. And this is the way I want you to start thinking when you're planning for retirement. Three situations. You're either overfunded, meaning you have more sources of income, so you have no risk, no matter when you first retire or the last days of your retirement. You're constrained, which means, well, you may have some limitations or troubles down the road, or you are underfunded, meaning that you do not have the income to carry you through retirement. So depending on where you stand, it alters how you should plan and conclusions you need to be made aware of. If you are overfunded, let's say you are Mickey and Megan Megabucks, well, you're basically self-insured, and that enables you to diversify and perhaps take on a little bit riskier assets. For example, maybe you put more in the stock market. Now, if you're financially constrained, you need to be careful. You need to protect a lifestyle floor with safe assets. And if you fall in the underfunded category, you are going to have to save and work more and protect your lifestyle floor with safer assets. So when you think about looking at retirement, you need to start thinking not just of yourself, but your household. The reason is households can have multiple careers, multiple pensions, multiple Social Security pensions. So when you're thinking about retirement, and especially today where a lot of couples where the husband and the wife both work, you have to take accounting or an investment course. When you think about that number, that's not the way you want to think about retirement. You want to think about what sources of secure income can I count on day one of my retirement to the last day of retirement. Now, if you've taken accounting or an investment course, you're probably familiar with a balance sheet. On one side, you have assets, and on the other side, you have liabilities. So in accounting, assets minus liabilities equals net worth. A retirement balance sheet, and we're going to take you through this, looks much different. And this is important to understand. Not only your options, but your real risk during your retirement years. Households have three major capital sources of cash flows. We have something called human capital. We have something called social capital. And the one that you're probably most familiar with is financial capital.
Well, Jim, as you pointed out, most folks have probably not taken an accounting or an investment course. So I'd like us to spend a little bit of time on this, if we can break this down, because as people do prepare for retirement, well, and you noted this, that it's not just about themselves. They need to think about the entire household. So can we peel back that onion a little bit and get below the surface?
Sure. Let's talk about human capital. And this is very important. Human capital, think of that as your ability to work, earnings from actual work, either full or part-time, or let's say entrepreneurial ventures. And the reason this is important to think about, because let's say you're falling short of your retirement goals, or maybe you're in that category called constrained, you're okay. But if anything comes up out of the unusual in retirement, it could set you back. Well, maybe you're going to be considering part-time work. I have a lot of clients, Chris, where including, I'll share the story of my favorite client, a doctor who, instead of retiring at age 65, decided to work part-time to age 70, use that part-time income to get all the trips he wanted to take overseas, which were expensive. I don't need to tell you, if you're going on a two-week trip to Europe or you're going to Asia, Australia, New Zealand, wherever it is, it costs a lot of money. And so by working part-time, a couple of things happened. He was able to postpone his Social Security, which meant more income down the road for him and his wife, but also he allowed his assets to build up to a higher level. So he went from what could have been possibly constrained to being overfunded. Now, let's talk about social capital. And that is mainly claims on others or other sources of income. Think of the most prominent one, which would be Social Security. Or perhaps you have deferred compensation at work, pensions, maybe not yours, but maybe your wife has a pension, and personal annuities. Now, when we talk about financial capital, that is what you are probably most familiar with. Financial wealth, savings, investment assets. The financial industry, unfortunately, focuses entirely on financial capital and not enough on human and social capital, which is where we're finding some of the elements in putting together a plan that can take somebody that may be underfunded or constrained and putting them in the overfunded category where we know their retirement is going to be secure.
And Jim, one of the reasons why I wanted us to dig more deeply into this particular part of it is I know that with the years of experience that you have, I wanted to ask, and I'm sure our listeners will appreciate the answer to this, but how much would you say the retirement environment has changed since you first started doing retirement planning? And then the other thing I wanted to ask that sort of maybe ties into that is, what sort of questions should someone be asking regarding these different forms of capital?
You know, Chris, as I reflect over my career doing retirement planning, I can think of a number of things that really changed. Number one, The biggest change came in the 70s when women entered the workforce. That was another source of income. And quite honestly, it was almost required with inflation. When I started my career, we were in the era of double-digit inflation. Oil prices went from a couple dollars a barrel to 40. Gold went from $35 an ounce all the way to 800. Real estate was going up. So women went into the workforce to support the household. What did that mean? Well, it meant it could have been a higher Social Security check. There was another source of income for savings, and in some cases, another pension. The other big factor that came in, you really started to see this in the 80s, was defined benefit pension plans. When I started in the business in the 80s, most individuals that worked in the public sector or the private sector had defined benefit pension plans that covered maybe 60, 70% of their income. Add Social Security to that, and pretty much their salary was covered between their pension and Social Security. Well, that went out the door in the 80s as more companies switched to defined contribution plans, you know, commonly known today as things like 401k plans. And the other factor came into play at the beginning of this new century. In the recession of 2001, Greenspan cut the Fed funds rate down to 1%, the lowest we had seen in over 50 years. And then the next recession, they cut interest rates to zero and kept them there. So that meant a drop in interest rates on safe investments. 2000, I could have got 6, 7, 8% on safe investments. You certainly couldn't get that over the last decade. And then the other thing I think that devastated a lot of retirements was two major bear markets, all of them coming within a decade. A 50% drop in the S&P in the bursting of the tech bubble, and then a 58% drop in the S&P coming during the financial crisis. So the combination of all these factors really altered the retirement landscape. Now let's talk about questions you need to ask yourself about these different forms of capital. For example, human capital. Are you self-employed or an employee? Because that can make a big difference. If you are self-employed, there are a lot more options available for retirement. Do you ever earn money outside of your regular employment? I have clients that have a little entrepreneurial business on the side. Sometimes their spouses do. Do you have outside interests that can be turned into, let's say, an employment opportunity? Let's say you retire from your regular job, but you have some interests that perhaps can be turned into income when you retire. And let's talk about social capital. Do you know your Social Security benefits? What are the best options for both you and your spouse? Are you a veteran? Are you entitled to VA benefits? Are you entitled to any kind of benefits from government programs? And are you covered by a defined benefit plan, as many people are if you work for, let's say, state, city, or the federal government? Will you receive employee insurance benefits in retirement? Now, let's talk about financial capital. Those are the things you're probably most familiar with. You know, the value of your 401k plan, 403b. What other financial assets do you own outside of a pension plan? Do you own any real assets like rental properties? And do you have any kind of assets that could be monetized? The other thing you really need to look at is what are going to be your liabilities? In other words, if let's say you own a home right now, but you still have a mortgage on it, but it's the big home. You raise the family in, the kids are grown, they're out of college, they're off, they've gotten married, hopefully cross your fingers, they don't come back home. And you're thinking, well, maybe, you know, it's time to sell the big house and maybe get downsized, get a smaller house, and here's another one. What about thinking about moving elsewhere? Maybe you live in a very expensive part of the country like New York, New Jersey, or California, and you're thinking, you know what, maybe it's time to move someplace where it's cheaper to live. Those are the kind of questions that you need to be asking. When you're thinking of capital, just don't think of those financial terms. Investment assets, your 401k, bank accounts, but that's only part of the picture. Today, you need to think of all forms of capital, whether it's human, social, because each one of these are going to play a big part of your retirement, and it's going to determine how you, let's say, your retirement plays out. Will you be able to go from phase one to phase two, to phase three, without any financial difficulties? Because we're seeing more and more retirement plans, Chris, blow up because things like political risk, the Fed lowers interest rates, or as we saw take place in 2018, we had a major tax law change that is going to impact high wage earners in high tax states like California, New York, and New Jersey. And we talk about unsystematic risk, which can alter many best plans. We had a client, we used to talk about this in a case study, but she was doing fine until she had a stroke, developed dementia, and all of a sudden, mom had to be put into a retirement home. And all of a sudden, there was, you know, over $6,000 a monthly cost that was not factored in any retirement plan. Well, in fact, there was no retirement plan. I mean, she lived well until this happened. And in the end, the kids had to chip in to pay the bills, and they also had to liquidate some assets. I had another situation where the client's only child, a daughter, died, leaving her two kids to be raised by my clients. Imagine, you know, you're 67, 68, and all of a sudden you become a parent again with teenagers. Every retiree's dream, right? And then what about, you know, bear markets with 50% losses? And you take a look at the Fed kept interest rates at zero for 7 years. What did that do to your bond funds or your bond ETFs or, you know, your CDs at the bank? And then, of course, we talk about longevity. People are just simply living longer. I have one client. She is over 100. I have a lot of clients in their 90s. All of these factors come into play, and you need to have a plan that addresses each one of these risks.
Well, Jim, those are a number of factors that you've mentioned that can really make this complicated. You talked about different sources of income to keep track of. And by the way, one of the things that you and I have been discussing is the impact of the gig economy and how people are starting to even pull income from these various sources. I do want to remind our listeners that the last time we did a show on the gig economy was July 9th of 2018. Jim, once all this is put together, these various elements, what does it end up looking like when it's completely synthesized?
You know, it boils down to this, Chris, making sure you are adequately funded throughout all three phases of your retirement. Now, we refer to this concept as flooring. In other words, a base level of income that is predictable and assured. It's not dependent on what the Federal Reserve is going to do or what, let's say, the stock market is going to do. It's a level of income you can feel confident you're not going to outlive. Now, Social Security, a pension or annuity is a good example, or let's say a laddered bond portfolio that provides you some degree of predictability. And here's the problem. Without an adequate floor as a base, you are really taking on much more risk than you actually realize. This could lead to financial difficulties later on in life, especially during phase three when medical expenses become the largest expense in your budget. As the example I just cited, where my client's mother had a stroke and ended up in assisted care as a result of dementia. So unless you have a secure floor of income that you can count on, talking about investments or diversification is meaningless. And that is why we're hoping to sort of change your thinking when it comes to planning for retirement. It really isn't about a number. It's about you. If you don't have a floor underneath your lifestyle, you could end up with a problem. Just think of all the financial planning assumptions used in most financial planning software today that uses things, for example, 10% returns on the stock market, 5 to 7% returns on bond income. That has not worked out well, and it's a reason why many retirement plans have failed or they run into trouble. You know, that's one thing that we do. When we do a retirement plan for a client, we use very, very conservative assumptions, both on the stock market or the bond market. We use returns in the 3 to 6% versus the industry standard of 10 to 7%. I mean, think of this. If you were invested in an S&P index fund from 2000 to April 2013, you went nowhere. And if you were invested in a bond fund earning 6 or 7% in the year 2000, that dropped down to 2.5% and 3.5% in the next decade. Good example, the Treasury bond today is less than 3%. And the only place I know of where you can get 5 to 6% in bonds is interest rate floaters, which we use. But most investors turn to what I call low-quality bonds. And basically, that's junk bonds or levered loans. You may not realize the risk that you're taking. And so this is why using these returns of, hey, you're going to earn 10% on your savings or your stock market returns isn't realistic. I mean, last year, the stock market was down 6 to 8%. The average stock was down over 20%. You know, these are the things aren't figured in on these averages. And believe it or not, you can go a long period of time before stocks break even. And let me give you the best example I know of. the stock market, as reflected by the Dow Jones Industrial Average, peaked in the year 1929. It wasn't until 1954 that the stock market, as represented by the Dow Industrials, exceeded the peak reached in 1929. Same thing happened in 1966. The Dow peaked at a little over 1,000, and it wasn't until after August of 1981 that the Dow would go on to a higher level. And you also got a glimpse of what can happen to assets like last fall when stocks and bonds, both of them went down.
That's crazy, Jim. So were people making money back then through just having balanced portfolios where there were stocks and bonds?
If you're talking about the last couple decades, I mean, it has been some pretty tough times and disrupted a lot of retirement planning, Chris, where, you know, I've actually seen, especially here in California, where clients, you know, they weren't getting this 6-8% on bonds. We had two bear markets where the markets were down over 50%. So we've seen clients, you know, downsize, cash in on the equity of their house, move elsewhere. We have, I would say, probably 25% of our California clients are moving out of state. They're moving to Nevada, Texas, our two popular spots. We've got one client that moved to Florida because they're in boating. They want to be on the coast where there's water. And so by moving to Florida, they were able to, well, number one, get rid of California income taxes and buy a home that was so much cheaper than what they had here in California.
So these are a number of factors for our listeners to consider. To make things easy, what would you say is maybe the most important element that someone can have of a sound retirement plan?
You know, if you, and this gets back to flooring, think of things that are guaranteed or predictable. And for example, an individual bond versus a bond fund. If I buy, let's say I buy a 5-year bond and it's paying me 4%. I know exactly what I'm going to get when I get my bond coupon payments. I'm going to get 4% every single year. And when that bond matures, if I put $10,000 in that bond, I get $10,000. I put money in a bond fund, I have no guarantee of what that dividend's going to be. And I have no guarantee of what the asset price is going to be. And that's one of the big things that people found out, bond investors in 2013, and again in 2018, you could actually lose money in bonds. Think of Social Security. It's predictable. You know what's going to be there. If you're fortunate enough to work for a company, or maybe you work for some government entity, you have a pension plan that is guaranteed. Or you may have an annuity. Another element is, let's say, part-time or full-time work. I mentioned the case of my doctor client who, you know, basically instead of just retiring completely, took a part-time job with another medical clinic and he worked part-time. He knew exactly what his paycheck was going to be and he could plan around it. Life insurance is also another important thing that we can use. Let me give you an example. I want to go back to my doctor client because this was a great example of going from a retirement funding situation that was maybe somewhat constrained to being overfunded. And what he basically did is he decided at age 65, he was going to work part-time. And he almost made close to six figures. And so that enabled him to pay for the trips, his hobbies. Another thing he did is he sold the big house, downsized, and paid cash for his home. And by working part-time, he did one thing. He deferred his Social Security to age 70, which means at age 70, it was going to go up 32%. The other thing he did is you can't do this anymore because the laws changed under Obama in the latter part of Obama's second term. But what he did while he was deferring his Social Security, his wife took half of his Social Security and deferred her Social Security to age 70. So at age 70, both their Social Security checks would be up by 32%. And also, more importantly, if he predeceases his wife, she could take his, which would be much larger. The other thing that he did is he allowed his assets to accumulate. He didn't need the income because he was working. And so basically, his assets grew by almost 40% in a 5-year period. So he went from constrained to overfunded. There was another case where the client had a $250,000 life insurance policy. The husband, they were still making payments. And we decided to keep the life insurance policy because when he passes away, his wife will get $250,000 tax-free, and that is going to be enough income to replace her own Social Security, because when he passes away, she has the choice of hers or taking his. His will be larger, but then she's going to lose her Social Security. Now we'll have $250,000 to produce basically what she's getting in income. Another case, we used an immediate annuity that would cover my client and his wife's basic living expenses when combined with Social Security. That's the flooring concept that I talked about. But there was no risk of them outliving their assets. He passed on. She lost her Social Security benefits, but she got her husband's. His Social Security, combined with the monthly annuity payment, still covers her living expenses even after he's passed on. So they went initially from constrained to becoming overfunded, which allowed both of them a greater peace of mind and allowed us to use other assets to provide upside income and growth. So whether it's working longer, as the case of my doctor, using life insurance to replace the loss of income, creating an annuity pension, a laddered bond portfolio, there are several ways to create a floor that assures your basic needs of living are covered and not subject to, let's say, the whims of the market or whatever the Fed is doing or whatever the political creatures are doing in Washington.
So, Jim, in summary, when planning your retirement, you need to think of three very important sources of capital: human capital, social capital, and financial capital. And with the goal of creating an income floor that covers your basic living expenses from the day you retire until the time you pass on and grow wings. Now, Jim, if any of our listeners would like to contact your team of retirement planners and start a plan, how can they do so?
Chris, it's real easy. You can call 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939.
Thank you, Jim. And for our listeners, on tomorrow's edition of Lifetime Income, we have special guest Yolanda York. Yolanda has served as the public affairs specialist for San Diego County since March of 2006, and she conducts numerous presentations about Social Security programs to various state, local, and private organizations. She also serves as the agency contact with news media throughout the county. So she is a guest that you don't want to miss on tomorrow's edition of Lifetime Income.
And on behalf of Chris Prytower and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, well, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.